Good morning. Thanks for joining me this morning for Hotline. I have a great guest and a good friend here in the studio with me this morning. Someone I've known for many years since I've been working here at the radio station. And surprisingly, I think this is the first time I've had him on Hotline. I have Casey Miller with us this morning. He is the Public Information Officer for Lincoln County. Good morning.
Good morning, Kara.
Well, it's good to have you here and have you on the other side of the desk, of the other side of the microphone.
It is, well, you know, and it is good for me, Kara, because I think I've actually filled in for you before on Hotline. And yeah, you know, I'm always asking the questions or putting the camera in people's faces. And so, you know, honestly, I'm a little out of my comfort zone actually being on the other side in some ways. So it's good practice for me. And, you know, it's a pleasure to be here. And I just have to say, you know, Yaquinabe Communications, you know, your history in providing local news and radio is just a tremendous asset to the community. And I just appreciate greatly what you do.
Well, thank you.
So it's nice to be here.
Yeah. 70 years, I believe. KMPT will be turning 70 years old in June.
It's so cool. My history in broadcasting too, radio has a special place in my heart, and I think radio, you know, continues to be an excellent medium. And the spoken word is just something that I really love, and I'm trying to improve my art form of interviewing, which you do very well. It's fantastic actually to listen to your interviews because it's a skill. And it's also something that you can have great joy in. The fact that this station offers this platform is just such a huge asset.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So let's talk a little bit about you. Mm-hmm. What is your background and history that landed you the job as the PIO for the county?
In about 97-ish, I left college and I moved up here. And my family, well, I was born in Newport. And my mom was from Toledo, and my dad was from Newport. My grandparents owned a place that some people still remember. It was called the Rich Maid Ice Cream. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've been going through old photos. Last weekend, I did this since my dad passed away, and I really got a chance to get a lot of his memorabilia. Really found some neat pictures of the Rich Maid Ice Cream, because I've been to the historical center and looked into archives, and I just can't find very many images of the Rich Maid Ice Cream. And so I've just been fascinating to find more of this family history. And I was kind of thinking of posting that question on the Facebook group. Is it Newport Rocks, or mm-hmm. are you familiar with that one?
Yeah.
Because, you know, somebody out there, maybe they have imagery from these times. And so I've been thinking about reaching out to the crowd and seeing.
You just did.
And see, well, yes. If you have any pictures of the Rich Maid Ice Cream, I found a picture the other day of where they used to have the restaurant prior to the location, which is now Ultra Life Cafe next to Subway. Their business was in the restaurant where Newport Cafe is now. Mm-hmm. And so I've got this image, and I can see those slanted glass walls. And it's just really, really neat and really dear to my heart to kind of find those memories. Anyway, so I came up here out of college. I was really uncertain about where I was going in my life. And moved in with my dad in the house that he inherited from my grandparents. And this is a funny story, Kara. So before I had left UC Davis, I had thought about going into radio, and I worked one day. I'm only one day for an AM station in a place called Woodland, which was about 10 miles out of UC Davis. And it was a gentleman who had his own political talk show, and he hired me as a salesperson. And I went down Main Street with this one-page flyer to encourage businesses to advertise on his program, and right away realized, like, oh my gosh, this is hard.
It's very hard.
You know? And so there was my one day in radio, and when I came up here, I thought, you know, I'd be interested to pursue radio. And I had went to the library and I had checked out a broadcast book. This was back when, I guess it was an older book, back when you had to get a license to be mm-hmm. on the air. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, I looked at this book and I thought, how am I possibly going to learn all this kinds of engineering and different details? Fast forward, you know, maybe like a year or so, I responded to an ad in the paper. And at the time, I think it was AgPal Broadcasting, and I started doing the Toledo Boomers sports program. So that was my first foot in the door. I was a board op for the Toledo Boomer sports program. And it sort of began from there. Radio, local radio, to me is very special because we can wear a lot of hats potentially. And so I interned for a while, and I really wanted the opportunity to be a DJ. And but I realized that, you know, that was going to be a tough thing to earn. And one day, a salesperson was going out on a call, and I said, you know, can I shadow this person? And I went out, and the station owner said to me, do you think you can handle it? And I said, I'll give it a try. So I worked for commission only for about a year and interned on their DJ programs. And eventually, sales was my gateway. You know, I did pretty well in sales, and it was tough. I had no idea what I was doing. And then eventually, when I was able to bring in sales, then I sort of got the green light to begin producing commercials. And commercial production came a little easy to me because I had been into music and was experimenting with digital software for editing. This stuff was just coming out. It was brand new. Learned those skills, and so I would produce commercials, I would sell radio ads, and then eventually I got an on-air shift as well. So as your Larry Blair, who is what we call a triple threat, he, well, I don't know if he has an on-air program now, but he doesn't. But we were triple threats. So we produced commercials, we sold advertising, and we had an on-air shift. And I did that for about 7 years.
Oh, we need to take a quick break.
You got it.
And when we come back, we'll be talking about your transition from radio to PIO right after this. All right, thanks for joining us for Hotline this morning with my wonderful guest, Casey Miller, Lincoln County Public Information Officer, otherwise known as the PIO. So tell us a little bit about your transition from what you were doing there into getting to work with the county.
Well, you know, I know I'm going the long route here, but I think I'll tie it together. Back in radio, producing commercials, selling ads, and having an on-air shift. You know, I did that for about 7 years. And then what I did was I went freelance and I started my own business. It was called Ocean 18 Media Services. And essentially, I was like a one-man advertising agency. I dumped $1,800 at the time, which was how much a good video camera cost. And, you know, I went for it. And Ocean 18 was something I did for about 3 years. And so I would produce videos. I would design websites. I would produce commercials, lay out graphic ads, really a jack of all trades. And I'll tell you what, the commissioners hired me in 2008, if I recall correctly now, to film their meetings. And really what was going on was this transition into Web 2.0, into the internet as, you know, an adjacent or viable platform. And we now know where that's gone.
Right.
And so, you know, I'll tell you why those skills, all those years in radio, eventually lend themselves to being a great boot camp for the county's PIO is, and you know this, Kira, when you create an ad for a business, you really have to kind of try to distill what that message is and maybe the essence of what is going to really inform people about buying a product or service. So that's really good training. Interviewing people, speaking, public speaking is good training for the type of work that I do now. And in essence, it's taking information on behalf of whatever entity it is and trying to take it now and distill it into something that, you know, everybody can relate to if possible. So, you know, all those years of doing that kind of work now are very much the types of things I do within the county for our county departments, for the county commissioners, also sometimes work with other agencies throughout the county. And really, I think before I became the PIO, they had created the position about a year before I was hired. So I was filming the commissioners' meetings, and they really wanted that to be the next level of transparency. So, you know, not everybody clearly can make it to the weekly meetings that are at 9:30 a.m. And so naturally, to put those online in video form was a way that the commissioners felt like they can increase transparency, increase civic engagement, And so, you know, I was the person who had the skills to do that. And this was a fairly new technology at the time. Now we don't even think twice about it. I mean,
I remember when you first started doing the videotaping and those really long meetings.
Yeah.
And you'd have to go, okay, time out. We need to change the tape.
That's right. We don't, you remember that. That's right, Kara. Yeah. And we don't need to change the tape anymore. And that was always, I had to stop down some good momentum to make a tape change. And so Liz Sample, she was the PIO at the time. She was moving out of town, and so I applied for the job. It was a competitive process. I think 40 different people applied, and ended up getting the position. So now I've been the public information officer for close to 10 years now.
That's amazing, and you've done an incredible job at what you do in helping to, like you said, create some of that transparency and letting people know what's going on with those meetings. That includes videotaping the meetings, like most recently the joint meetings between the city and the county. So can you talk a little bit about your job and what it is that you do when we come back from this break real quick?
Sounds good.
Back on Hotline this morning with my guest, Casey Miller, the Lincoln County Public Information Officer. And he was just going to describe for us his job and his duties and what he does as the PIO for the county.
Well, and Kara, I did want to follow up on something you mentioned about the joint session and the fact that that video is online. You know, when we look at all of our jurisdictions, a lot of them now, it's pretty commonplace to have audio or video online as well. The city of Newport, you know, eventually got there. I think really the county was the first to sort of lead the way. But, you know, it's pretty standard stuff. And the fact that you and I were just taking selfies of each other so we can, you know, share on social media. I think where we are now, even 10 years from when I started with the county, is really, you know, light years away. I mean, this is just an ever-present part of our lives that we have this digital technology. We were talking about phones. So, you know, I think what I would like to say is that whole level of transparency, in a lot of ways, I think is really improved through platforms like the internet. And I think that's fantastic because it means citizens, A, can share their viewpoints and kind of unilaterally share information with people. I think those are the advantages of, say, for example, Facebook. And I know there's a lot of backlash towards social media right now, but I still think it plays a good role in our lives, but it's really probably about how you use it.
Right.
You know, so yes, going to the work I do, and I kind of would like to lay out the structure of the office I'm in because, you know, maybe not everybody knows what central administration looks like. That's what we call ourselves at the county. And in our office are three elected officials. You may know who those individuals are, Doug Hunt and Terry Thompson and Bill Hall. Beneath them, their immediate staff are me, the public information officer, and also Christy Whitaker. Then we have three attorneys in our office, Jerry Urbage, Kristen Yule, and Wayne Belmont. And there's also a paralegal, Janet Harrison. Wayne Belmont has been with the county forever, and he also wears that county administrator hat. So think city manager. He, in many ways, puts that hat on with the work that he does, which is really effective in a lot of ways because, you know, he fundamentally understands the issues of the organization, but he's also so knowledgeable about the legal aspects of,
I can't imagine the county without him, to be honest.
Nor can I. He's a great man. These six, seven, eight, nine individuals, we compose what we call BOC/LC. That's the Board of Commissioners and Legal Counsel. So we're all stuck together within one small space and work together and really do have a pretty good time, actually.
So, Casey, of course, the Board of Commissioners are elected positions. We've got a couple up for election right now.
Interesting.
So your job, you get to work with potentially different bosses.
Yeah.
Every few years, potentially. What is that like?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We create what I would call you know, good firewalls in the office between campaigning and, you know, those pressures that these elected officials have to deal with and attract that really exists sort of outside the office. Mm-hmm. For example, I'm filling in, I think, to replace Doug because we're in that election season mm-hmm. time. You know, those are important firewalls that need to be there. It's interesting because I think intuitively, sometimes it can be more tense because for me, I'm thinking, wow, okay, I could have a new boss here in several months. And so I'm curious, just like the citizens are curious, you know, who are these individuals mm-hmm. and why do they want to do this work? Do they understand the work that they really would be doing if they become the next commissioner? Yeah, it's definitely interesting times. Bill, Terry, and Doug have kind of been around for a while, previous to Doug, Don Lindley. So mm-hmm. we've had the same cast of characters for quite a while. And so this could mean something very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine that that it would, in, you know, different personalities and having to work with people every day and you get used to them, what you expect from them, what they expect from you, and then to have that change, I would think that would be a little crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, on a real practical level, I think of, you know, the boot camp that this individual may go through, a brand new elected official walking into the office for the first day, getting the basics like email access, mm-hmm. Key card access to the building, getting them on payroll. These are really technical types of things. But then also, you know, the degree of knowledge they bring in and then, you know, teaching them or working with them to understand what is really the scope of their administrative ability within this job title.
Right.
The commissioners do a lot of different things, both internally and externally. Obviously, as your PIO, you know, I try to put as much time as I can to creating that narrative so people understand. I do a lot of administrative tasks too. So as much as I love doing county connections every week, interviewing people, as much as I like doing that fun or vibrant public outreach, it's really a small slice of what I do. I push a lot of paper. I do a lot of administrative activity. I'll tell you more about that.
That's right, Red, after we come back from our bottom of the hour news break. I'm Kira Morgan. Joining me this morning on Hotline is Casey Miller, Lincoln County Public Information Officer. And you're just sharing with us about some of the things that you do there as part of your job in the office. So it's not just press releases and videotapes.
No, it's not. It's, as I was mentioning earlier, Christy Whitaker and I are two of the primary staff people.
And what does Christy do?
Well, Christy Whitaker is the Board of Commissioners' executive assistant. Christy really is an anchor in our office, but if Christy's out, Casey's Christy. So
he is.
You know, and as you'd mentioned earlier about, okay, here we're in election season. If individuals change, we have new elected officials. I'll tell you, and you can relate too, is, you know, from a staff perspective of like, how much can I get done in a day? How much can our organization do? I mean, we have an incredible organization, but within our office, you know, someone has an idea. Wow. Okay. Who's going to execute that idea? Looking at what we can just do by capacity, how many things that we can take on. To me, you know, I'm thinking, okay, someone may have some great ideas. Then we've got to find a way to execute those mm-hmm. ideas. For example, like the Stepping Up Initiative. We brought in Steve Sparks as a consultant to work on that program. I think it's an excellent program and it's much needed.
Yes.
But someone's got to, you know, push the needle on that. Obviously, Bill Hall doing a great job of doing that, too. So, you know, you need people, you need systems to follow through with. In our office, we are very lean, mean machine. And I'll tell you, I feel, even though I try to manage it emotionally the best I can, you know, I feel like I'm really trying to keep up quite a bit. And another email comes in or maybe another crisis happens.
And then Kira calls you and says, Casey.
Yes. And then Kira calls, hey, can you help me, you know, organize this? So there's a liaison type of function that I'll have with helping connect people to a commissioner, mm-hmm. get an appointment with a commissioner. Can they attend this meeting? Work on the logistics on that. The other examples of more administrative duties are, for example, like our appointed special road districts. Now, mm-hmm. when we create road districts, they are no longer appointed, but there's about, I would say, 16 of them still in existence that are from the older model, the appointed model. Those are little taxing districts that neighborhoods can create to have monies to manage their roads. Those individuals have expiring membership every year, so we need to appoint new members. We do some degree of assistance with them. We offer a annual training about every 2 years for all special districts, not just special road districts. But we've got to organize those types of things, answer questions. And to me, it's something that's of great value, but isn't, you know, running around shooting video and talking about the more glamorous things we do. And of course, it's not always glamorous either. That's sort of like an administrative task that I'll do. We've got around 40 committees and boards. These are an excellent interface for the citizens to provide their feedback to the county commissioners. And we keep track of all that membership in our office, and we appoint people to those committees and boards. And so that's something that takes quite a bit of energy to keep up with. It's constantly changing, constantly moving. So quite a bit of work there.
And you're also the one that's going to field the calls when there's a crisis, so to speak.
Yeah.
So something happening, a road washing out, people get upset, they want answers. Then you are the one,
yes,
that they go to, and you say, okay, this is what's going to happen, here's what's going on, and you kind of try to settle the dust a little bit and get them pointed in the right direction.
Yeah, part of my role is when I put on my emergency management hat. And when we think about emergency management, and the community's probably heard that we have an emergency operations center, and the county's really a coordinating entity with jurisdictions and the public. For example, on our recent distant tsunami watch, my notification went off, my phone went off, and I looked at it and went, huh, what the heck is that? And turned over. And then I said, about 5 minutes later, I said, what the heck is that? Threw my clothes on, jumped in the car, sped to work, literally walked into 14 people, all just moving into our little tiny emergency operations center. And so I am the lead on the public information in that structure. You know, and with that being said, the incident command system, the FEMA system at which jurisdictions are given structure to kind of mobilize around an event, is a really important one because, you know, in our communities, FEMA wants to make sure that we have the training to coordinate the way that we do. And if we have an incident and we get federal funding, but FEMA does an audit on us and says, wait a second, you know, your people didn't have the training, you know, they can withhold those monies, mm-hmm, ask for those monies back. So, you know, Jenny Damaris obviously is our emergency manager. And ideally, any of this support staff that comes in to participate in an emergency, when we open our emergency operations center, we are constantly looking to build our bench that those people have this incident command system training. Because not only, you know, yes, of course, is it important when we look at reimbursement for federal funds, but it's a language, you know, it's a structure that puts us in particular roles and then allows us to work together on
some protocols to go,
yeah,
by, which we'll talk about right after we take
Sounds
this
good.
Quick break. All right, we are back on Hotline with Casey Miller this morning, and he was just talking about his role with emergency preparation and what's involved with that. So the county has also been very involved with preparing and planning,
yeah,
and having drills and things like that, and tabletop exercises,
yeah,
and that kind of thing. Let's talk a little bit about your role,
well,
with that.
And I just have to say, we were having a good chuckle off mic or when I told you that I was, you know, literally crawling out of bed and heading into the emergency operations center. It's nice to know that you were there too, because our partnership is so important. I'm glad you can relate. I did have to stop and get a Red Bull right before heading into the courthouse. I mean, this is the interesting thing. Like you're saying, we do a lot of prep. We do a lot of training, but nothing can prepare you for 2 a.m. You know, you're pounding the pavement to get to where you need to go. So all of that training that we do is really critical, and it's made me be better. But I'll tell you what, the real thing like our distant tsunami watch, hones you in. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, a lot of training, I would say, you know, we could always do more. But it's tough. It's tough to get everybody with all of our busy and hectic schedules to coordinate and do these things. And we do a great job of it. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is I think we should do more. And it's, but we already do a great job. And it's
well,
a lot of work.
Getting the public trained is also what's really important. When we have a situation, we get lots of calls. How am I going to know? How, you know, am I in the tsunami zone? You know, making sure that you're aware, so that when you get that call or you wake up, you turn on your radio, you listen for, you know, updates and what's going on, where you need to go. Making sure you have that kit in place, in your car, in your home. Making sure that you have, you know, flashlights. If you've moved, we've moved recently. And now everything for me is all a kerfluffle going, okay, where is everything? And okay, now it's new situation. So now we need different things. So just keeping track of that is important, right?
Oh, totally. I'm so glad that you explain it this way, Kira, because, you know, it really becomes something that needs to be integrated into your family management, your personal management. Of course, having a bug out bag or a 72-hour go kit is just critical. You know, in my family, my wife has one, my son has one, I have one. We know whether we're in and out of a tsunami zone.
Right.
That's a real big piece. I mean, for me, for sure, before I leave the door, is my family going to be okay? Mm-hmm. Do they have everything that they need? And planning, taking some efforts, you know, a couple times a year to check your bag, to remind your family, talk about it and say, hey, what is our plan? It's really something that just has to become part of our lifestyle here on the Oregon coast.
It does. It does. And next month, wow, we're almost in next month already.
Going by fast.
Yep. Coming up in March is the anniversary of the Japanese earthquake and tsunami. And so the county's busy getting ready to do some presentations. Started, I believe, last Saturday in Walport and has some more coming up in the next few weeks to kind of get the community prepared and in that mindset of preparedness, right?
These presentations are great to attend. I will be trying to film one of them and putting it online. So hopefully I can deliver on that and get one on the county website for folks. That earthquake in Japan, the real events really inform us on and remind us that, you know, these things can happen. Mm-hmm. And how prepared am I? Is it kind of an inconvenience, but also an exercise to have things like the distant tsunami watch, because it just slams into your awareness like this could happen. It's a good thing in the sense that it reminds people to reflect and see just how prepared they are.
It is. It's really important. And it's just as important as getting into habits. For instance, I always use the example of fire drills. You know, your kids go to school, they get the fire evacuation maps, they draw out their house and they, you know, show where people can evacuate and they go home and they share that with their parents and say, hey, we need to do a fire drill and we need to, at least that's the way it happened in my house. And the parents get excited about it. And then you go, okay, we do need to test these batteries. We do need to say, and saying it out loud is really important. You can have it in your head, but saying it out loud is really important. I remember having the conversation with my son, Nick, and with Nathan when they were both home. And there was a little bit of fear, you know? Even though, you know, Nick was older, he was still like, became a reality. Wow, this could really happen. And you know, mom's got to go to work, but you guys have to take care of yourselves. And here's what you need to do. And I remember prior to the 2011 event, we had another, you know, accidental warning that happened. I think it was like in 2008, something along those lines. And, you know, got the phone call and, okay, I'm on my way, you know, and you know, I'm in my sweatpants and t-shirt and I'm grabbing my jacket and said, okay, you know, get a hold of, you know, we were up high and I said, get a hold of, you know, our friends, family, get them over here, make sure we have all of this stuff prepared. And Nick looked at me and went, Mom, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to work, honey. And he went, you're leaving? Yeah. And he just had this panicked look on his face. And I said, yes, but you're fine. And he goes, but we have a tsunami and you're leaving? And I went, emergency broadcast. That's right. Me. So I got to go. I love you and you're safe. You know, listen to the radio. Yeah. I'll be talking to you. You know.
Well, you know, you are a first responder in many regards. And, you know, hats off to our first responders because.
Absolutely.
You know, we really have to rise to the calling when it happens. And you know, your comment there, it's good to talk about it because, like Reed, he's 7, my son, and he really, I think, in his mind, maybe had seen YouTube cover shots and, you know, really thought of a tsunami as a giant wave that might be higher than the Aquinnah Bridge. I mean, these are the ideas he had in his mind. And so we spent some time talking about that and talked about, okay, well, what is this really? So I think it's a good discussion to have, and it's an important discussion to have.
It is. And having many ways of being able to reach out to people is also super important. You know, people have been trained all their lives. You know, if something happens, you listen to the radio. If you lose your TV signal, you know, that's coming from Portland. They may have different information than we do. We're local. We're right here. Dave Miller is phenomenal in having the best equipment that he can possibly have. You know, if necessary, he can shoot an antenna into a tree and broadcast from anywhere he needs to. He's a ham operator, you know, so he can get that information and get that out there. Yeah. So, and getting the text messages and getting the phone calls, you know, that's important coverage as well for, you know, outlying areas and stuff. So it all works together.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And it's tremendously confident building to know that you guys are there. And I mean, you know, this station right here, I was getting pretty close to making the call to you. That watch was canceled. And it's just, it's really great to remember that, you know, you need to turn your radios on. I mean, that's one of your first frontline ways to know what's going on. So big asset.
We will be here day, night, you name it.
Yes. And yeah, running out of the house in your bathrobe, that's you're going to be here.
Dave's used to seeing me in my pink fuzzy slippers in my bathrobe. Yeah. And so yeah, I have a change of clothes in the back room.
Yes.
You know, we've got it all prepared here.
And you've talked to your family.
Yes.
They understand. And you've got them in a safe place. And you've got them with the necessities so that when you leave, you can leave with confidence.
That's right. All right. We're wrapping up with KC Miller, Lincoln County Public Information Officer. It's been a great hour, very informative and lots of fun. And I appreciate you taking
time
out of your busy day to come in and share with us, KC. So anything you want to talk about here as we wrap up?
Well, you know, I think one of the tools the county has for talking about what's happening with our organization is the county website. I think it's been about 3 years now. We went to a new platform, which has been great. It's got a lot of cool features, I think, that really help people find more information about county services now. But one of the ways we put sort of the, quote, hot topics, unquote, is on the homepage in a section called What's New. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to do as your county webmaster and sort of navigating the information that's coming out from our organization, we try and list the latest things there in that section. Now, if you click on more information, it'll show you all of the, quote, news that's coming out of Lincoln County. One of the things that's not up there yet, but that is on the way, is going to be a media release and some details about recycling. Mm. This is one that's, I think, really important. It's changing, but China enacted at the beginning of the year what it calls its national sword. Mm-hmm. And when you think about this, they essentially buy most of the recycling items from the entire world. And what they have decided is that the bales of recycling that are coming into the country for them to process have too much contamination. And I've heard the story, they'll literally, you know, do these tests and they'll open up one of these bales. And if they open it up and find a glass bottle in it, they can just reject that entire bale. They're really trying to clean up the recycling process in their own country. And that's now affecting us. And so I really think that we're going to have to think as individuals and be a lot more diligent about what we're recycling. I think the haulers as well, you know, we're going to coordinate with them to assist them, and then the outreach they need to do, teach their customers, hey, wait a second, learned this term the other day called wishful recycling.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, well, I think it may be recyclable. Not totally sure. Let's just throw it in the blue bin.
Well, it's like cardboard. We think, oh, if it's a cardboard container, for instance, a cat litter container.
Yeah.
Oh, that just goes into recycling. Yeah. But if it's got that plastic coating on it, it can't be recycled, yeah, from my understanding.
It's just something that I think we all need to work together on and understanding what can go in the bin and how we can be good stewards of making sure this stuff gets recycled as opposed to thrown into the landfill, because the haulers do take it to another intermediary that sorts these items out. The things literally are on conveyor belts and people literally grab the stuff that they see that shouldn't be going in. And you know, so there's going to be some work to do here.
I think we've gotten spoiled with the commingling. We used to be very diligent, one in each bin and stuff, and the commingling has gotten really great.
Honestly, I think you're right.
But I think we've gotten spoiled, and the plastic bags are going in there, and you know, I'm the recycling Nazi at my house. You can't put this in here. You've got to put this over here, you know. So encourage folks to go to the website. They have questions about anything going on with the county. Again, I appreciate you coming in. What is the county website?
www.co.lincoln.or.us, or just Google Lincoln County, Oregon.
Yeah, make sure you get the Oregon part in there, or you may end up in Nebraska.
That's so true.
All right, Casey. Well, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
And taking time to share with us on Hotline.